We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Ryan Cooper, writer at the American Prospect, on the relationship between socialism and antitrust. And also on the potential of a government bailout for AI. And also why we should say bye-bye to Chuck Schumer. Also on the program today, newly released Epstein emails say Trump knew and spent hours with the Epstein victims. And knew what was going on. House to vote on ending the government shutdown today. Also, supposedly at 4 p.m., at Alita Gravala to be sworn in today by Mike Johnson. Venezuela orders a massive mobilization in response to multiple U.S. warships and an aircraft carrier being moved into the region. Jack Schlossberg, Kennedy heir. I think he's the grandson of JFK.
That's correct.
Announces he will run for the seat to be vacated by Gerald Nadler. See who else jumps into that race. Feel maybe we're done with the Kennedys? I don't know. Secretary of Transportation Duffy has no timeline to restore full flights. As ICE leaves Chicago, DHS pretends it helped crime numbers go down there. Trump regime set to sign a new defense pact with Saudi Arabia. And in wake of his 50-year mortgage fiasco, Bill Pulte is being investigated by Fannie Mae investigators for snooping through Democratic mortgage records. That was the basis of their attacks on Letitia James. And also, is it Linda Cook, the Fed member of the Fed? All this and more on today's Majority Report.
It was Lisa Cook.
Lisa Cook. Sorry. Apologies. The main YouTube stream is not live. So what are we doing? We are not live on YouTube.
This show somehow didn't start up the main show. So the fun half was live, but the main show was not.
Okay. Well, are we live now on the main show? Okay. So if folks want to see the intro there, I will just repeat that we have Ryan Cooper. We're going to be able to put the podcast out, right? All right. We'll deal with it. We are back live on YouTube. I'm still getting the same IMs, guys.
It's definitely live.
Okay. Twitch title also says yesterday. Long week, ladies and gentlemen. Long week here. Brian went to Benihana's last night, so he's a little bit wiped out.
Yeah, me and all the vets, we went to Benihana, got free Benihana's.
There you go. Okay. Crazy radical lunatic says, Sam, you sound like a disappointed dad. Everybody's doing their best. And just being corrected from yesterday, I tried to remember the name of the doctrine of discovery, which in a phone conversation we had yesterday with somebody talking about the ongoing project of colonization that is this country. And the doctrine of discovery was still remains within the context of our laws in this country, not necessarily statutory, but as ruled upon by the courts, last cited by Ginsburg in 2005, I think. And it wasn't directly the doctrine of discovery. It was how the doctrine of discovery became canon within the context of U.S. law. And she cited that, if that makes sense. All right, let's get to the big story of the day. Well, the second big story of the day. In some respects, they're related because, as you know, the government, they're going to vote on restarting the government today. It's also going to require Mike Johnson to swear in Grijalva. I'm sorry, I can't pronounce it.
And Grijalva.
Grijalva. And Mike Johnson's going to swear her in. At that moment, there will be, theoretically, 218 votes to force legislation to the floor. And it's going to take a couple of days. I think Johnson has a couple of days after that vote is made or that petition is addressed. And then eventually the House will vote on whether to release the Epstein files. Then remember, that legislation will go to the Senate, and the pressure will be on the Senate. And who knows, they may never take it up. In the meantime, investigators on the Government Oversight Committee, House Oversight Committee, Democrats, I should say, released emails that were written by Jeffrey Epstein. And there's actually a couple other emails sort of embedded in these emails, right? Like you email me, I reply to you. I can see both your email to me and my email. Here is Caitlin Collins teeing this up.
CNN breaking news.
All right, we do have breaking news in the Jeffrey Epstein investigation. Democrats on the House Oversight Committee, minutes ago, literally, releasing emails that they say were written by Jeffrey Epstein that explicitly, specifically mentioned Donald Trump by name and in context that we really haven't heard before. Let's get right to Caitlin Collins, who's got this reporting. Caitlin, what are you learning?
Yeah, John, these are emails that show Jeffrey Epstein mentioning Donald Trump by name multiple times in private correspondence that he had with people, including Ghislaine Maxwell, obviously his longtime associate and accomplice, and also the author Michael Wolff, in a time span of about the last 15 years or so in these emails. Now, these are coming out from the House Oversight Committee. They had issued a bipartisan subpoena to Jeffrey Epstein's estate, John, as you know, earlier this year. And so they've gotten their hands on a trove of documents. And these are emails that included Jeffrey Epstein on them. They were sent either to him or from him that mention Donald Trump before he was in office.
All right, let's read these emails and maybe we can put them up on you have these tear sheets, right? And let's be clear, like, there's no way to read this where it doesn't look like Donald Trump was certainly knew what was going on. Never mind that they were best friends. And I think, you know, on CNN, they're just going to let the emails speak for themselves. And you can. Here is the first one. This is from GMAX. GMAX 1. That is Ghislaine Maxwell.
No, this is from Jeffrey 2.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. The first one is... Oh, no, yes. The first one is... okay. The first one on the thread. So we're going to read from the bottom up, I guess.
Right.
The first one is from Jeffrey Epstein. His email was gvacation. Yeah. Or, yeah, G, I guess. Jeffrey Epstein E... I don't know what his middle name is. Vacation. To GMAX. This is April 2nd, 2011. years after he got a sweetheart deal from Alex Acosta, who was at the time the attorney general in the U.S. attorney's office, I think it was, in Florida, and then subsequently became Donald Trump's labor secretary. Just an incredible coincidence.
Also, Pam Bondi never looked into it as victims wanted her to when she took over the role.
And so he writes to Ghislaine Maxwell, "I want you to realize that that dog hasn't barked is Trump. That the dog that hasn't barked is, I want you to realize that the dog that hasn't barked is Trump." So now I think that's probably an idiom. I don't think he actually thinks that Donald Trump is a dog. He's just saying that somebody who hasn't spoken is Donald Trump. And then it's redacted. The victim's name: spent hours at my house with him. He has never once been mentioned. Police chief, etc. I'm 75% there. I don't know what that means.
Me neither. I can't decipher that. I'd be curious what the police chief, etc. I'm 75% there.
We'd have to go back and see what was going on contemporaneous in 2011. It sounds like there was like another investigation or some other controversy that was coming up during that time. The person who hasn't been mentioned or has spoken is Trump. And this was obvious, not just to Jeffrey Epstein. It was obviously obvious to Ghislaine Maxwell because she wrote back, "I've been thinking about that."
Dot, dot, dot.
Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, too, there is a there is something else in this that I can't quite figure out why, but underneath his email is a what do you call it? A disclosure that you see when you get stuff from attorneys. "The information contained in this communication is confidential, may be attorney-client privileged, may constitute inside information, is intended only for the use of the addressee. It is the property of Jeffrey Epstein, unauthorized use." He's really covered his bases there.
That's in all my emails when I send for booking requests.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. But you should take off the part where it's Jeffrey Epstein's property, because people get really freaked out. That's why we have trouble booking people.
BrianVacation.com.
That name used to have juice in this town.
Exactly. So, okay, that's 2011. Now let's jump to January 31st, 2019. And, of course, Donald Trump is the president. And Michael Wolff is sort of canoodling around with him. I think we want to do the other one first. Yeah, let's do the one from 2015. So he's had a relationship with Michael Wolff at least since 2015. Michael Wolff, incidentally, absolute garbage man. 12/16/2015. This is as Donald Trump enters into the race, right? He's been in the race now in 2015 for about probably 5 months, and it's looking like he's going to win. Or at the very least, it's like looking like they're going to have a tough time. Yeah. On Tuesday, December 15th, Michael Wolff writes, "I hear CNN planning to ask Trump tonight about his relationship with you, either on air or in a scrum afterwards." So that may be after the debate, actually. There may have been a debate December 15th. We could probably check on that. And so Wolff is fishing around for Epstein. And "if we were able to craft an answer for him, what do you think it should be?" says Jeffrey Epstein. Now, what this also indicates is like it could be a completely academic exercise, right? Jeffrey Epstein would be like, well, I'm completely out of contact with Donald Trump. I have no ability to actually inform how he would respond to this. But just, to, you know, for a thought experiment, what would you suggest that I tell him to say? That was the presidential debate in Vegas.
There was a debate that night.
Okay. And then Wolf wrote back, I think you should let him hang himself. If he says he hasn't been on the plane or to the house, then that gives you a valuable PR in political currency. Now, why would that give him political currency? If it's true that he hadn't been on the plane or to the house, then why would that in any way, it might give you any type of political currency? That's weird.
Say it's the plane or the house, not and the house. So it's he's been to both.
You can hang him in a way that potentially generates a positive benefit for you. Or if it looks like he really could win, you could save him, generating a debt. Save him from what? I mean, Epstein, I guess, could say like, oh, no, he never did. He did never came. I never was friends with him. I didn't know him.
Friends with
Democrats. And then he would owe you a debt. Why would he owe you a debt if you said that, if that was the case? That's so weird. Of course, it is possible that when asked, he'll say Jeffrey is a great guy and has gotten a raw deal and is a victim of political correctness, which is to be outlawed in the Trump regime. And holy crap, that's what he said.
Sounds like they know him.
Yeah.
He's a great guy.
Deny. I got it. So then 4 years later, I think by this point, Jeffrey Epstein is about to go to jail, right? Or January 31st, 2019. I think he's about to go to jail. And Trump is out there. I would have bet you that there was a.
Yeah, July of 2019 it was.
Okay, so this is when things are heating up. Trump gets asked about Epstein, I bet, and claims that he asked him to resign from the club. And so Epstein writes to Michael Wolff, something victim Mar-a-Lago. It could have been like regarding blank Mar-a-Lago. Then there's another long redacted thing, a whole sentence. Trump said he asked me to resign. Never a member, ever. So he was never a member of the club, ever. Trump probably made it up. I asked him to resign as a way of like pretending like they had a falling out. And then he says, of course, he knew about the girls as he asked Ghislaine to stop. Now, he asked Ghislaine to stop what about the girls? He's complained that they stole a girl. Like, I think he said that, yes, right?
Virginia Dupree. Yeah.
But he asked Ghislaine to stop, which means it was ongoing. And he knew it was ongoing. We don't know why he asked him to stop. Maybe he was just mad. Like, how come I keep hiring all these young women that you keep taking? But if he knows that Ghislaine is getting them and essentially, like, I don't know what he thinks that Ghislaine is doing other than trafficking them. And he says, stop.
He's a real Bruce Wayne.
Not never do that again. But rather, stop.
I'm calling
the cops.
Stop
the ongoing thing you're doing that I am aware of. We'll see if this has any resonance on the right. They've all been squawking about it for so long, and now, you know, they run for the hills, but we'll see now.
This guy's been talked about for years.
I'd also just point out, check out Dropsite, who is Murtaza and Hussein and Ryan Grimm have been doing really great work on the intelligence connections of Epstein at this exact same time. It's crazy.
Yeah, there's like pictures of him in the where was he? The Cote where
Cote d'Ivoire?
Yeah, was he in the Cote d'Ivoire?
Somewhere in Africa, I forget.
Yes, like negotiating some type of like I haven't read that piece, but
are you still talking about Jeffrey Epstein?
I'm told by international socialist Sam, the dog that didn't bark comes from a Sherlock Holmes story. In fact, guard dog didn't bark is a key clue indicating that the intruder was known to the dog. Used as a motif to indicate lack of response, significant in understanding a situation or drawing conclusions, Epstein was a bigly into English lit and a former teacher of young girls. We will talk more about this, I would imagine, in the coming days. It's going to create a lot of pressure, we're going to see less opportunity for any of those three Republicans who are voting with the 20 Democrats to drop out. And in fact, we may see more Republicans now signing on to this discharge petition. And then this type of information is going to put more pressure on the Senate as well to take up the legislation. We'll see. In a moment, we're going to be talking to Ryan Cooper, writer and managing editor at the American Prospect. A couple of words from our sponsor. You guys know, particularly these days, it's an insane time. And I feel like I am constantly feeling overwhelmed by a bunch of different stuff. I have a list of to-do things that is a mile long, and if I can knock one off a week, I am happy. But there are some things on that to-do list, yours anyways, that you need to get done. And I'm talking about estate planning. Trust and Will turns estate planning from a when-I-have-time-to task into a quick, straightforward process, ensuring you're protecting your family's future today. Go to trustandwill.com/majority. Get 20% off their simple, secure, expert-backed estate planning services. It took me a couple of years before my daughter, after my daughter was born, to get a will. And it was the entire time that I felt like I had a sword of Damocles over my head. I was like, I got to do this. I was intimidated. It took a long time. I wish Trust and Will was around because it makes it so much easier. I've noodled around on this site and it is super straightforward, super easy to use. You go in, they ask you questions step by step by step, makes it super easy. And, all the information, all your documents are securely stored with bank-level encryption on their site. Each will or trust is state-specific. They are legally valid, and they are customized to your needs. I've walked through this process, and it was super easy to use, very straightforward, far less complicated than I think you assume. And I will tell you, once you do this, the sense of relief in not having this hanging over your head is going to be amazing. It gets an overall rating of excellent, thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot. Add some peace of mind to your future with Trust and Will. Go to trustandwill.com/majority. You get 20% off. That's 20% off at trustandwill.com/majority. Check it out. Also, doesn't matter whether you're still planting some of your warmer zones, you can be planting outside. Or if you want some trees inside, I'm trying to get Brian to get a fig tree in his house.
Oh, yeah. It's not going to be that hard to get me to do it.
Nope. Doesn't matter whether you're planting now or later, fast-growing trees has everything you need to make your dream yard a reality. You can also order, I think, now and get it delivered early spring. Get there early so you don't get the you get the full selection of apple trees they have there. And of course, they have the best quality and selection of plants, and they deliver them straight to your door. Fast Growing Trees is America's largest online nursery, has over 1,600 unique trees and plants, all locally grown in the U.S. and cared for by experts, and they know how to do it right. Order online, get your plants delivered directly to your door in just a few days without ever leaving home, and plants make a great gift. Their Alive and Thrive guarantee ensures your plants arrive happy and healthy and ready to thrive. This is one of those companies that I was using for years before they became a sponsor, and I was super psyched. The best thing about this is that you don't have to go to a, you don't go to a big box store. You don't go to a, you know, a home improvement store, get their meager, really uncared for garbage plants, with all due respect. And you don't put it in the back of your Subaru and have it tip over and have all the dirt on the back. And then you get home and the thing falls apart anyways.
This is all hypothetical?
Hypothetical. But the point is, you get a huge selection of plants and trees. They have a 14-point quality checklist, ensures you're getting the best quality plants ever. Each plant is cared for individually based on its needs, from watering routines to the amount of sunlight, giving your plants the care they deserve from the time they start growing to when they ship to your home. Fast-growing trees makes it super easy to order online. Your plants are delivered, like I say, in just a few days. No experience necessary. At Fast-Growing Trees, every plant comes with instructions and tips, so you'll be able to care for your new plants so they can grow to their fullest potential. I mean, Hosea pears, bloomerangs. Those are amazing, actually. You should look that up.
A bloomerang?
Yes. It is a lilac that blooms both in April and in July. This season, they have the best deals for your yard, including up to half a ton, up to half off tons of plants and other deals. You get 15% off your next purchase when using the code MAJORITY at checkout. That's 15% off your next purchase at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code MAJORITY at checkout. Now is still a great time to plant. Use MAJORITY to save today. Offer is valid for a limited time because they get in there, they establish for their roots in a couple weeks, they go dormant, and springtime, they're off to the races. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Check out the link below or in the show notes. Support the MAJORITY Report. We'll put that in the podcast and YouTube description. All right, quick break. When we come back, Ryan Cooper. We are back. Sam Seder on the MAJORITY Report. Emma Vigeland out this entire week. Joining us, welcoming back to the program, Ryan Cooper, writer and managing editor at the American Prospect. Ryan, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be here.
So I've been wanting to talk to you about this piece that you wrote over a month ago now. And then since then, you've written a couple of pieces I wanted to talk to you about. So I figured we roll them all into one. But you made an argument, I think maybe in part in response to Matt Brunig's piece over at The Argument. Making the case for the socialist case for antitrust. And some of these ideas, you know, I've been talking about for a while, but I wanted to walk us through this, particularly relevant in that, and you had mentioned that Lena Khan had supported Zohran Mamdani, and she was officially appointed co-chair of the transition team. I guess it was last week. So obviously, Mamdani both respects her as an administrator, but also in terms of like the type of people that she is going to be oriented towards when they start to fill out this administration. But just for a starting point, give us a sense of what Matt Brunig was writing, because he was writing a review of something that Barry Lynn had written. Barry Lynn is sort of maybe, I think it's fair to say, like the godfather of the sort of more modern antitrust revival movement. I mean, Lynn was at this. I think we interviewed him on this. I think I may have interviewed him at Air America, but certainly in the early days of this iteration of the Majority Report, talking about antitrust.
Yeah, so, you know, Matt, you know, who I respect a lot and I consider, you know, a good friend of mine, he is coming at it from a little bit of a different angle for me. So he's talking about this book, Cornered, I think it was written by Lynn in 2010. And, you know, the book makes some good points, you know, about how consolidation can cause, you know, problems in the marketplace. But I do think, you know, one of Brunig's points is well taken in the sense that I think that Lynn and some of the antitrust crew, they tend to think that you can get everything that you, you know, want to get politically with just antitrust, kind of overstate the case a little bit. And so Brunig's saying that, you know, antitrust is no replacement for the welfare state, because that's his main thing. And, you know, that's fair enough. But what I'm saying is that, you know, insofar as you have a, you know, market, an economy of any sort, whether it's capitalist or socialist or whatever, a market is an important technology that can be useful depending on the context. But one of the lessons that the antitrust people teach us that is totally correct is that markets don't work without regulation, and they don't work without regulation in particular to create competition. You know, because like otherwise all the sort of, you know, Econ 101 stuff about how markets are supposed to produce good outcomes, like, you know, low prices, high quality, all that sort of thing, that just doesn't happen. And so, you know, actually, one thing I did, ironically funded by Matt Brunig, was I traveled to Greenland, where they have a whole bunch of state-owned companies. The biggest company in the country is called Royal Greenland, and it's owned by the government, and it does fishing. It employs like 10% of the workforce of Greenland, but it's not a monopoly either. They have private sector competition, and I think that you know, serves an important purpose for Greenland in that it keeps the state-owned company honest. And I think an even more relevant example of, you know, the value of this sort of the markets as a technology that are basically created by the government is in China. You know, you look at how does China do antitrust? And they do antitrust with a sort of a public option almost. They have a bunch of state-owned companies that participate in the EV and the solar space and in the battery space. And they also extend all of these, you know, low-cost loans to, you know, different regions. And the intention of this is to create lots of different companies that will then compete like cats in a sack, you know, to create, you know, the lowest cost, the highest volume of you know, solar, EVs, whatever. And they've just totally dominated. You know, you look at Chinese solar production and installation and beating the rest of the world put together. It's like 60-odd% of the entire global production and installation of solar panels.
And they went from like 0 to 60. It feels like this happened in the past like 6 years, essentially.
It did.
It probably was, you know, probably closer to 10, but nevertheless. All right, but let me just back up just a little bit here, because just so that folks can understand the nuance here. The antitrust folks argue that concentration of economic power is both problematic in the economic realm because it doesn't produce the best outcomes in the market. It corrupts the markets. But it's also problematic in a political sense, too, because oligarchs are basically the end game of that type of problem. They also traditionally have a problem with state monopolies as well, which is where sometimes that bumps up against a socialist perspective on things. I'm getting a little bit of feedback. Are you getting that as well? Okay. I don't know what that is. All right. You know what? Should I reconnect here? All right. We're going to take a quick break and fix this. Apologies, Ryan.
Yeah, no.
I think Mercury might be in rising or whatever the thing with the bad technology,
retrograde,
something's happening. But all right. So, Ryan, my point being that socialists often, or I should say antitrust folks often have a similar problem with a government monopoly in instances. And so the idea that markets are important, whether it's in a socialist or a capitalist economy or some type of mix, for that matter, they function much better, is your argument, under the auspices of antitrust.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it varies like on the, you know, circumstances. Like there's your classic natural monopoly, like a power producer, you know, like you really can't realistically have competition between like electricity grids. That would be senseless. And so, you know, then you basically have your distinction between, regulated monopoly in the private hands or the state just doing it itself. You know, I would favor the latter competition, but situation that is. But yeah, I mean, you know, you look at, compare the United States with our sort of national champions like Boeing. You know, we have our great airline manufacturer. And they just end up, sort of too big to fail. And it's better to have, you know, a number of different companies, you know, even if you sort of have to, you know, bend the quote unquote rules of economics to make sure that they, you know, sort of stick around and keep fighting each other. But, you know, I don't think necessarily that socialists and antitrust would disagree on that too much. You know, I think a lot of the disagreement comes back to, you know, Barry Lind kind of comes out of the Jeffersonian tradition. And when you're talking about like concentrated money, And, you know, like Jefferson wanted to be everyone to be a yeoman farmer. You know, that's the way that we're going to ensure we have political liberty, that everybody's got their own little piece of land. And so we can't be like coerced by the marketplace. And like, that's just not remotely, nobody lives like that anymore. Not even farmers live like that anymore. And, you know, I think, again, you know, Bernie has a point in that, like, concentrated economic power is bad. You know, like big monopolies are bad. Elon Musk is bad. You know, you look at the level of oligarchy in this country has gone completely crazy. But if you really want to get like hardcore equality, antitrust is not going to get there. You know, you look at like the Haiti of the New Deal in the, you know, the 40s and the 50s. It was still a highly concentrated ownership class of people. You know, they owned a lot less as a percentage of the economy, but it was still the case that like the bottom, you know, 40-50% of Americans owned essentially nothing, you know, maybe a house, but not like, you know, big chunks of the great corporations and so on. And to get something like that, you would need a more socialist policy, like a social wealth fund, like what Brunig says, that the government like owns all the companies, you know, through the stock market and then holds those in trust, like on behalf of the whole population. But again,
the function of antitrust in the context of if one was wanted to get to some type of more socialist economy. Or full-on socialism. I don't know where we stop, at what point it becomes, you know, actually socialist as opposed to, you know, where along that line of a mixed economy we get to. But regardless of where your endpoint is, talk about the utility of antitrust in that journey.
Yeah, so I think it's just something that as a socialist, I would think as far as keeping the, you know, market sector of the economy sort of thriving and dynamic and not dominated by a bunch of sluggish, you know, behemoths that are like managed very improperly. You know, in my reporting on business, I think that there's kind of a economists talk a lot about efficiencies of scale, that if you have a bigger company, then by definition, you're going to have a more efficient company because you can like buy larger quantities of supplies and so on. And I think that's true up to a point. I think you see a lot of just terrible mismanagement in companies that get so big that they just have like many, many different divisions and they don't really know where their profits are coming from. And so to keep, you know, business sort of streamlined, you want to have like, I don't have them broken up into sort of, you know, reasonably logical sectors and to have like at least, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 competitors for each one. You're talking about like cell phones or something like that. And to, you know, just make sure that the economy is ticking over. And, you know, if you're a socialist, one of those things could involve the public ownership of companies like Zoran's idea of starting up a city run grocery store in New York City. That's kind of a crazy place to compete because that's a really cutthroat industry with very low margins. But on the other hand, if you're ambitious, you know, and you want to prove that you can make this work, it's not crazy. You know, there are places where the market is not serving the population of New York. There are food deserts in New York City where, you know, because of the low income of the neighborhoods and so on and so forth, that there are not, you know, fresh vegetables that are readily available at a decent price for New Yorkers. And that's something the city absolutely could do if it were sufficiently determined and competent. This is something that cities all across the world have done, including in red states. You know, I think you may have discussed this before on the show.
Yep.
But, you know, there's a little Erie, Kansas, I believe. They got a little city-run grocery store, and it's because the only private one closed up. And so
all the Packies in New Hampshire are government-run.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a crazy idea. You know, it's just a question of competence and determination. And that's in all my reporting on the Nordics that I've done, funded again by Matt Brunig. That is the secret sauce of the Nordics. You know, that's how they really get the goods. It's like you set out these really extreme sort of, you know, ideological objectives of, you know, getting your equality up. We want to have a cooperative grocery store that accounts for half the market. That's actually the case in Finland. it's not government run, but it's not capitalist either. It's owned by the membership. It's like REI, if REI were not fake. And yeah, you just have to have a really, you know, efficient business with, you know, a management team that knows what they're doing and a good supply chain and all that sort of stuff.
And as a political matter too, it seems to me that the strength of antitrust is that we have laws on the books today that allow for much more rigorous antitrust enforcement and application than we've had in the really prior to the Biden administration. The Biden administration really took advantage of what the laws as passed allow for. And ostensibly, it seems to me that if you have rigorous antitrust, you theoretically should be able to disempower some of the most powerful political players because they've gotten so because of their ability to concentrate wealth. And any further reforms, if you want to call it, or introduction of socialist policies have less of a hurdle, it seems to me, because you have less incumbent power from those formerly who are monopolizing things.
I think that's absolutely the case. You know, one thing Brunig mentions in his article is that, you know, he thinks that antitrust was appealing to, you know, the Democratic Party because it allowed you to do something that was egalitarian without having to propose new benefit programs or to raise taxes. And I think there's probably something to that, you know, like Democrats have been allergic to, you know, welfare and taxation, you know, the real like penny ante stuff, like Clinton raised it on the rich a little bit, Obama raised it on the rich a little bit, but the type of broad-based tax increases you would need to fund a proper welfare state. Democrats don't really like to think about that. On the other hand, you know, if you think that antitrust doesn't, you know, inspire corporate rage, like you are definitely wrong. You know, the whole of Silicon Valley was driven to an absolute frenzy of hatred by Lena Khan. And, you know, I think if you can really criticize them for anything, it's that they didn't go hard enough, you know, that, they did a lot of enforcement and stuff and it did a lot of good, but it did not fundamentally break the power of these giant oligarchs. And what you need to do, you know, if you're going to do this, like it's quite risky, I think, and you need to go whole hog or not at all, maybe, you know, to make sure that they can't come after you, in fact, afterwards, because they don't have the money anymore.
I think a part of the argument that Harris's campaign, one of the areas where they stumbled was that some of those incumbent interests came rushing back in and saw Harris as an opportunity to get rid of the antitrust regime that was there. You know, indication that to the extent that there was a project started, it had not been completed, or those people wouldn't have had that ability perhaps to influence her campaign in the way they did. I mean, that's the point, right? Is that like the Democrats ostensibly are allergic to these type of taxation and this type of redistribution because I don't know what just changed. Are you plugged in? To that redistribution and because their donor class essentially has enough money that they can sort of influence those Democrats to have that temerity when it comes to redistribution and welfare state, et cetera, et cetera. And perhaps over time, and particularly, like you say, if they go whole hog under a rigorous antitrust regime, those people just don't have the outsized wealth or influence that it takes to sort of stop the power of a more broad-based movement, I guess.
Yeah, the you know, I would love to see someone, I forget who it was, Jim Fisk, I think, said of Teddy Roosevelt, it's like that we bought him and the son of a B word didn't stay bought. And that he did a lot of antitrust stuff after, you know, promising not to or you know, taking money to that effect. But yeah, you know, it's a, I feel like, you know, Democrats have thought they could sort of have their cake and eat it too, as far as big money and doing sort of quasi populist policy, you know, that like, we'll sort of nibble around the edges, but at the same time, when it comes for, you know, elections against Donald Trump, we'll run back to Reid Hoffman and the rest of our sort of pet billionaires and ask for contributions because, you know, he's like bad and whatnot. And yeah, I think that that was a foolish bet, that it didn't work out. A lot of these same, you know, a lot of formerly liberal billionaires, people who at least made liberal noises, like Elon Musk even, was not nearly such a crazed reactionary back in like 2018 when he was posting, you know, LGBT content on formerly Twitter. And yeah, you know, I think my definite where the antitrust people, I think, are definitely correct is that, you know, it may not be the case where, you know, you'll never get to full equality where all the citizenry has an exactly equal proportion of the national wealth with antitrust. But I do think there is a level at which wealth concentration becomes like a national security emergency, that it's actually not, you know, not only impossible to have a functioning democracy, but like you will have crazy policy, that some of these billionaires will go out of their minds and it will cause, they'll have so much power that they'll be able to just devastate the entire, you know, country. I mean, basically that's my story of Elon Musk.
Right.
You know, it's a guy who just directly interferes with you know, American national security policy, going and saying to, you know, Ukraine while they're like under attack by the Russians, like, we're taking your internet. And they don't even do anything to him because he has too much money. It's like, okay, nobody should be allowed to have that much money. And nobody should be, again, to the antitrust point, we should not be so dependent on one guy's companies with their federal contracts for the military and other agencies that we don't have any other options. And he's just got the whole government over a barrel. It's totally unacceptable. And, you know, we need to cultivate something, whether it's, again, another private company or the government just building these devices themselves as they used to, you know, back before World War II. They used to build tons of ships. It was state-owned, state-run, and they were of high quality. But at any rate, you know.
No, I agree. And let's pivot to, since we're talking about Silicon Valley, you wrote a piece that I think was at least in part inspired by this exchange. This is clip number 16, and it's... it was Sam Altman, who's the guy who found OpenAI. Sorry. It's one of those days. And he's being interviewed by Tyler Cohen at the Roots of Progress Institute and Big Think Conference, I guess, or I'm not sure exactly what it is. But here he is. It feels like he knows something that maybe the rest of us didn't know. let's play this clip.
At some level, when something gets sufficiently huge, whether or not they are on paper, the federal government is kind of the insurer of last resort, as we've seen in various financial crises and insurance companies screwing things up. So I guess, given the magnitude of what I expect AI economic impact to look like, sort of, I do think the government ends up as like the insurer of last resort, but I think I mean that in a different way than you mean that. And I don't expect them to actually be like writing the policies in the way that maybe they do for nuclear.
Oh.
And there's a big difference between the government being the insurer of last resort and the insurer of first resort. Last resort's inevitable, but I'm worried they'll become the insurer of first resort, and that I don't want.
Okay. I have a problem with any of the resorts that they are hanging out there. And let's just be clear. You know, the government bailed out the banks. they didn't have to bail out the banks in the way that they did in 2008. They could have bailed out the homeowners, and the homeowners were still obligated to pay the banks. So everybody would have gotten paid, as opposed to bailing out the banks and then saying, do your best to bail out the homeowners. Your executive editor at the American Prospect has written about this extensively over the years and wrote a book on it, in fact. But the idea that this that you can start your own sort of enterprise that really is like sort of almost in many respects a solution looking for a problem, put so much money into it because the people around this guy have so much money, they don't know where to put it to get a good return. Like literally, it's like we need to start a new sector of the economy because we have so much money that it's just, it's driving me nuts that my billions of dollars are not making more billions of dollars in and of themselves. We've got to create this sort of like this sector of the economy that has produced no returns, but is now, he's saying, going to be so big that we can't let it fail.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
It's a classic situation, I think, that you end up in highly unequal countries with a very, very bad income distribution, which was the case in, 1920s America, where, what do you invest in? You invest in mass production technology, mass production, mass consumption economy. But if it's very unequal, then the working class doesn't have enough money that would justify investment in new businesses selling new products to mass consumption base. So you paper over the cracks for a few years with borrowing, increase in credit card debt, that sort of thing. But eventually it all blows up. And that's exactly what happened in, 2008. And that's exactly what happened in 1929. And it might be happening again. Yeah, the only thing to invest in is a company that not only has low profits, has negative profits, setting money on fire in unprecedented quantities, tens of billions of dollars a quarter the last time I saw, $13 billion in the quarter three. But in the sense of a bailout of the whole economy, like it's definitely true that if there is a recession that's touched off by, some company imploding, the government should step in with Keynesian stimulus to restore full employment and production. But that's a very different thing from saying that this company, one individual company, OpenAI, or the banks that lent to them, like the banks that lent to the all these, subprime mortgage originators and whatnot, back in the housing bubble, that company needs to be preserved at all costs.
Right.
I think sometimes bankruptcies are salutary. When a company makes terrible decisions and loses lots of money and has no viable business model, it's supposed to go bankrupt. That's like kind of the entire point of capitalism, that you are rewarded when you succeed and you're punished when you fail. And there's no conflict between, you could say you step in at the point at which it becomes like a systemic issue, a galloping crisis, and you backstop the liquidity of the whole system. But that doesn't mean that you have to step in and preserve, the shareholders, especially of individual companies that blew themselves up.
I'm also unclear as to like what is. I mean, I understand in the context of the financial crisis of 2008. I mean, there was obviously it was built upon the crisis came out of sort of like bets upon bets upon bets and side bets, essentially. And it threatened the infrastructure of our banking system. I'm not saying that we couldn't allow some banks to go under and whatnot, but I can understand the idea of like, well, the banking system is pretty integral to the functioning of society. And while, I think there was a better way to sort of save the banking system, you could have also started by saving the people who theoretically owed the banks money and just giving them the money to pay the banks. What are we, why is AI systemic? What is it about OpenAI that if OpenAI disappeared tomorrow, aside from people losing a lot of money and people who probably had plenty of money to lose, frankly, how is that too big to fail in the context of society? Like, I just don't get the relationship here between AI and, you know, you could tell me that it's like the only thing propping up the stock market. Well, then, you know what, dude, you shouldn't have gone to the track. Like, you know, but I don't understand how it is integrated in our economic system, as it were, like the way that, you know, banks were.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say up front that I'm not super like down on this forensic financials of all of these companies. You know, what happened after 2008 was it's like you just sort of look under the hood and there's this, you know, festering pile of incomprehensible financial contracts that nobody had been paying attention to. But I do think so far, at least, there is one big difference with the AI situation now as compared to 2008. And that is that most of this stuff has been funded out of profits, not debt. You have, you know, Facebook and Google and, you know, the rest of the big players in technology who all just print money. You know, these they make like tens, hundreds of billions of dollars in profits. And they're spending it all on data centers because they think AI is going to be the next big thing. You know, we saw this happen just a couple of years ago. Facebook took its tens of billions of dollars in profits and spent it on what it thought was going to be the next big thing, namely the metaverse. And that turned out to be a big pile of garbage that nobody wanted. And it really didn't have any effect on anyone because it wasn't connected. It had all been funded through profits and not debt. That has been changing, though, in the last little bit. In that we're seeing a lot more lending happening in this space. And so you could imagine it coming to be like all of these data center expansions and whatnot being funded by loans from the big banks to where if they all default, they go bad, then you could have a systemic panic. So far we're not in that situation. And yeah, again, just as you said, if it does happen, you know, you'd hope that financial regulators would clamp down on this to stop them from making terrible loans that are going to blow up in the first place.
The Trump administration financial regulators are definitely on the job to make sure that there's no loans going to all of the people who put him in office.
No. Yeah. Is the trustworthy guy, that Bill Pulte, he's on it. He's on it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
Russ Vogt is trying to bankrupt the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Does the FDIC even work anymore? Like, who? Like, theoretically, would it be regulators at the Fed? Like, who would be? Is there any sort of like active regulation of the banks right now? Didn't they already like sort of loosen capital requirements? Yeah. I mean, to the extent that there are regulators there, they just seem to be in charge of shutting down the regulation machine.
Yeah, we saw Trump's guy at the SEC basically say, you know, come on, fraudsters, we're not going to enforce these rules anymore. You know, Biden was really, you know, Gary Gensler was harshing everyone's mellow with all, you know, by putting people in and prosecuting them for committing crimes. We can't be having that, not in this country. Yeah, it's a good question as to who would be nominally in charge of this. I guess it would depend on how the financial contracts were structured, because like it might be the SEC, it might be the CFTC or the OCC. It's a great thing about American government, by the way, that we don't have one financial regulator that would just be like, okay, it's this guy's. No, we got to divide it up in like four or five different agencies.
Easier to avoid regulation that way, I suspect.
Yeah, and then there's more, you know, seats for Trump's cronies to be, more positions that can be filled by various goons. You know, you got to have a nice diversity of goons in your second Trump administration. You can't just have one financial work.
Mission accomplished in that respect. All right. Well, one last thing you wrote this week. Time for Chuck Schumer to step down as leader. We're hearing a lot about that. It's been something that I've been also talking about for, I don't know, how long has he been Senate?
When was he nominated?
We have a giant tapestry about it in the studio.
Yes, listener, like in the last, like four cycles ago, the Chuck Stops Here, I think, is the poster. My sense is... that there is sort of like, I mean, I think Bernie Sanders said this, like, who's going to be leader if he's not doing it? It seems like nobody wants that job except for Chuck Schumer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, sort of party to the internal discussions among the Democratic senators, but he does seem like he got the job basically by promising that he would not, as Harry Reid did before him, force them to do anything.
Yes. Honestly, that's why he is like a freaking, that's why I say he's a concierge. Like he's not there to lead. He's there to provide Broadway show tickets or do you need I got a great place that'll do your, will buff your shoes. Like he's not doing anything as a leader.
I mean, he's doing maybe some sort of rotating villain calculations, to make people line up to eat it on these votes and make sure that they're either retiring or that they're going to be up for reelection in the longest possible distance away. It's just I would like to point out, by the way, that I wrote this article before the big Democratic cave from the eight senators to reopen the government and give millions of dollars to Ted Cruz.
We should say the millions of dollars to Ted Cruz, it's not just a clean CR. There's a couple of things that have been snuck in there, including one that basically wipes out hemp farms that produce any type of hemp that has 0.1% THC. Don't want to get demonetized, or and also another provision that allows senators who were maligned by the response to January 6th to sue the government for like up to like $1 million. Is that what it is?
I don't know the details exactly, but yeah, people who are subpoenaed by Jack Smith, they can now get damages for basically being implicated in a treasonous plot to overthrow the Constitution. They're now going to get paid for that. It's a great.
Not exactly. That is not exactly a deterrent to doing it again next time.
Yeah. But that, it's true that what Bernie said, that nobody wants to do it. It's a thankless job. The party sort of doesn't even exist in the way that a European party does. Like there's no way to discipline these senators more or less because they don't have, it's not like back in the old days where the party would control their funding and whatnot. It's just people freelancing for the most part.
It seems to me, the reason why the Republicans have a lot more discipline, in addition to them being a much more homogenous party, right? I mean, there's really like you don't have to guess. If you take 10 Republican voters, there's 8 of them, and you could probably list exactly what their positions are on just about any issue. I mean, it's quite simple, and maybe it's 9 out of 10 you could guess. So, A, they don't have that. They have, they don't have the same sort of like a big tent, as it were, of ideological difference and policy difference. But they also don't have seniority in their amongst their ranks. They don't go by seniority. And so there's an opportunity for the leader to go like, hey, guess what committee you're not. You're not the chair of this committee, or hey, you're not going to be on this committee. And it seems to me like that's the leverage, right? I mean, you can exercise some party discipline, because there are, in fact, some goodies that you get if you toe the line. And Harry Reid, again, was able to impose some measure of party discipline.
Yeah, he was. No, I don't think it's impossible. You know, it's just that Senate Democrats don't want that.
Right.
And I think also, you know, there's a dynamic here with the filibuster, in that it really devalues being on those committees, that it more or less doesn't matter, at least doesn't matter nearly as much. Like being a head of the Appropriations Committee in the Senate or something like that, that used to be a really important position. That'd be people like waiting on your beck and call, you know, and you could really govern, you could direct resources across the country, you could make a big difference. And that's kind of not really the case anymore. When you don't pass normal legislation, the normal budgetary stuff, and instead everything gets rushed through in these continuing resolutions or these reconciliation bills that are 3,000 pages long and just stuffed with everyone's pet projects that have built up over the last, you know, couple of years, it makes it less attractive. But I do think, you know, fundamentally, it's a characterological thing. You know, Republicans are part of a movement that is, you know, contesting for power. You know, they have a leader, Donald Trump, who tells them what to do and will threaten their lives if they don't. You know, I mean, literally does that. Mitt Romney was spending $5,000 a day on security. And, you know, Democrats just don't have anyone like that. You know, there's not a sort of party leader who, you know, has sort of like risen to the top to make make the case for here's what we should do. Joe Biden wasn't really like that. Obama probably was, but he's been long gone. And
you obviously didn't see that ad that Hakeem Jeffries put out with the bat. So maybe we'll send that over to you, Ryan. Ryan Cooper, writer, managing editor at the American Prospect. We're going to link to those pieces that we talked about today. Really appreciate your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invite.
All right, folks. That's it for the first half of the program. I anticipate a tremendous amount of technical difficulties as we move into the
fun half of the
program.
There was some masterful producing going on behind the scenes here during that.
Just a reminder, it's your support that can make this show possible. And the more members we get, the more we can upgrade the technical stuff that we have going on. Join themajorityreport.com. When you do, not only help this show survive and thrive, you get the fun half, and you get to IM us. Paul Smenis says, I think it's good. And also, don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, hot chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off, and you can buy the Majority Report blend. Justcoffee.coop. Matt, what's happened? What was going on with his backdrop? How did he do that?
Oh, just a little bit of...
Did he do that on his
own? No, I did that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
because
I feel like you don't want to leave people with a green screen.
No, absolutely not. But I was going to say something. You really sure you want to do that green screen?
Well, I was going to try to find an American Prospect one, but I struck out on their Google image search. They didn't have...
Why wouldn't we use our own? Well, we should do that for everybody.
Put everyone in our universe?
Yeah, why not?
Well, because most people don't have green screens.
I'll add it to the email.
If you have a green screen, please set it up. Here is a link to purchase one from B&H Photo. Left Reckoning.
Yesterday, Left Reckoning debuted its new afternoon showtime. Catherine Liu talking about the PMC and Nick Boland talking about orphan wells in Oklahoma, because it turns out that all those risk takers that give us our energy in the oil industry don't actually like to clean up after themselves, and they depend on you to clean up their the wells that aren't producing anymore. So a great interview there. Go subscribe to Left Reckoning on YouTube.
Okay, let's go to the fun app.
3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now. And I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now. And I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now. But I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. The Majority Report. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Who? What is up, everyone? Nomi Key.
You did it. Let's go, Brandon.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women.
Stop talking for a second. And let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But, dude, you want to smoke this 7-8?
Yes.
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
Oh, I'm going to go start
life. Libertarians.
They're so stupid, though. Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-3501. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion.
Sold.
It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this.
Poop.
We call it satire. Sam goes with satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled,
wow,
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.
We are back. Sam Cedar, Fun Half, Emma Vigeland out this week. Scientist from Maine. My husband is a longtime listener and more recently introduced me to the show. We're a double subscription household now. Can you wish Carl a happy 29th birthday? Carl, happy 29th birthday. That is a man of valor. Someone also just told me that, Hassan Piker's in China, and they call him Lemon Bro.
Yeah, apparently because he was jealous of I Show Speed, a streamer's China trip a few months ago, or maybe it was last year. I can't remember. His sort of reaction of jealousy went viral in China.
But why is that Lemon Bro?
Because I think like lemon, it's like you're sour. It's like you're sour because of jealousy.
Oh, that's funny.
So he's like a meme over
and
there. Now.
Did China send him on the trip?
No, I don't think so. I think he went on a trip with a few other streamers, it looks like.
Oh. All right. Anti-Semitism. Can you confirm reports that Emma will be on the Tim Heidecker show Friday, same time as MR? Is it at the same time?
That'd be a huge betrayal. Hours.
Do they do that show at the same time? God, this guy Heidecker.
It's unbelievable. Betrayal.
It just, first of all, if it's true that Emma's going to do Tim Heidecker's show or whatever, however he pronounces his last name, it is a tremendous betrayal. And if Heidecker or whatever he calls himself these days is doing a show at noon, that's also
1 p.m. Eastern time.
Jesus.
Where'd you get that idea?
Yeah.
Emma's gonna call in like Don Draper saying we need to open up a L.A. office.
Yeah, exactly.
She's going to be wearing a linen suit, a white linen suit.
Donald Trump, when did Donald Trump come up with this Trump cologne?
So this is his victory cologne line, debuted in July of 2024.
So, okay, so he's had this cologne for a while.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit weird that he decides to bring this out for these guys. I honestly wonder, like, why is he pushing this now?
On his Syrian guests?
Yes. But be that as it may, he's also just a weird dude.
He's a very weird
now
guy.
Now, also,
he's trying to push Christmas sales? I don't know.
Also, understand that, well, I guess that's probably what it is. Yeah. Christmas is coming up. That's exactly what it is.
Gotta move this.
Gotta move the product.
Even Al Qaeda likes it.
And also understand that he just got juiced probably 2 days ago, according to my calendar. That's his 30-day supplement injection. Okay, yeah, top me up. So his energy levels are high.
I'm flying, baby.
I'm flying. And so I want to sell. I want to sell. Here he is.
Men's fragrance, right? Yeah. It's the best fragrance. Come here, thanks.
I have one here, sir.
Okay. So what we'll do is just take that, Joe, put it in, and then
what is the bottle with Emmy?
Did you hear that? Wait.
Sorry.
Yeah, we talked over like his great joke for these guys. How many wives you got? Yeah, give this one to your wife.
What we'll do is just take that Joe, put it in, and then the other one is for your wife. How many wives?
One.
You guys said never know. Right?
You never know.
You never know with these guys.
You know who I'm talking about, these guys? You know,
I've got a dead wife. I put her in a golf course.
Yeah, exactly. Do you get a tax break if you do that with your wives?
You never know. That was this new Syrian president. We didn't say that.
Right. The one new Syrian president, former Al-Qaeda. Yeah, you never know with these guys.
Water under the bridge.
Okay. What are you going to do?
It was some serious big dogging. Just like dousing his neck.
Oh, my God. And just like, I mean, I don't want to say I have sympathy for these guys.
For Al-Qaeda?
But it's just like anybody who has to be in that position of like going to the White House and kissing his ass because their entire national project is reliant.
Like, remember Shinzo Abe in the first term, that image of him just like squirming in his chair, so uncomfortable.
It's just God. There it is. Right, that's the smell of victory.
I'm actually curious what it smells like, in a horror morbid sort of way.
I wonder what he smells like. He's got to be
who? Trump?
Yeah, it's got to be so gross.
Oh my God!
Imagine being stuck in a small environment,
like an elevator.
Oh my God. Melania Trump is a horrible human being, but she really, I don't have sympathy for her, but still.
Think about it.
The one time they slept together must have been so painful for her. Oh
my God. Yeah, and then she had to give birth to the world's tallest baby.
Here's an interesting thing. I wonder if part of the deal in Elon Musk re-injecting funds into Republican midterm and other elections is that they've made a trade for the HB1 visas. And I don't necessarily have a problem with the idea of having immigrants come into this country who have skills that we don't, that people don't have here. I mean, Trump brings it up in this interview, but we said it at the time. There was a plant in, was it in Georgia?
Yes.
And it was an electric car plant, right?
Hyundai.
A Hyundai. And Hyundai had brought in about 300 to 400 Korean workers who had been trained in building, I think it was like the batteries.
Yeah, the electric battery.
And they were there ostensibly both to ramp up production and to train U.S. workers on this technology. And I think
Stephen Miller's watch.
And I think, well, I think there was like a local a congresswoman or somebody running for Congress who saw Koreans there and called ICE. And ICE came in and arrested like 300 of these guys. And they were treated horribly, of course, like ICE does for all the people they arrest.
I mean, just a snapshot of the insanity of our time where we're falling behind in these sort of advanced manufacturing processes and having people come in on it, and then we sick our Gestapo on them.
Right. And so then Trump had to go and kiss South Korea's ass and apologize, et cetera, et cetera. But the idea that we're going to allow HB1 visas as sort of like a backdoor way to get cheaper labor is messed up. But also, we should just allow immigrants in. Period.
Give them citizenship.
Yeah, this whole story is really only controversial for Nazis.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
The criticism of the H-1B from people like Bernie or the left broadly is that it's not an immigration program. It's a bonded labor program that doesn't lead to immigration except in a small number of cases.
Exactly. If we have a clear and easy path to citizenship for all immigrants, it would be much better. But here's Trump basically doing a, I guess, sort of like a 180 on this. And he's doing it in, this is going to cause problems. There is, let's be clear. We played that that clip of Kevin Roberts, the head of the Heritage Foundation, having to go in front of all of the Heritage employees and do a struggle session around his coming out and defending Nick Fuentes and Tucker Carlson. And all of a sudden people at the Heritage Foundation, like, you know, they're going, it's like Casablanca and they're going like gambling here. Wait, what? You guys are supporting Nazis? And Kevin Roberts said, no, we're not. Of course not. No, that was a mistake. I accidentally supported Nazis.
I was making a point about free speech.
And then even in that instance, he also said, like, but we also have to be honest. Nick Fuentes has a lot of followers. And the part that he didn't articulate, which was sort of understood, is in the Venn diagram, like, we can't have a conservative movement if we kick those people out. That's what he's saying. We can't have a functioning conservative movement, particularly amongst young people, if we kick those people out. Because really, I mean, you know, he's looking around. Like, come on, really, guys. who are we kidding here? But here is Donald Trump bumping up against one of those nativist, revanchist, racists, Laura Ingraham, who you'll recall, like, she and Mark Levin were some of the biggest voices rallying against George W. Bush in his attempt to introduce immigration reform.
There's never going to be a country like what we have right now.
And does that
mean Republicans have to talk about it, Laura?
And does that mean the H-1B visa thing will not be a big priority for your administration? Because if you want to raise wages for American workers, you can't flood the country with tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands
of foreign
workers.
Well, I agree, but you also do have to bring in talent.
We have plenty of talented people here.
No, you don't.
You don't have
certain talents, and people have to learn. You can't take people off an unemployment line and say, I'm going to put you into a factory where we're going to make missiles, or I'm going to put
How did we ever do it before?
Well, let
when
me
you
just,
and I were
I'll give you an
up.
Example. In Georgia, they raided because they wanted illegal immigrants.
Pause it for a second. There's a couple of things that we need to explicate here. When he says they, what he means is me. When he says they raided, he means my administration raided, not they.
This isn't a they.
Who was the they? It wasn't like some rival car company.
Chevrolet
raided the Hyundai factory. All right, go back a little bit.
Also, saying there's no talent in this country, like, how is that not a huge scandal amongst the MAGA?
Because they will eat it, man.
Well,
it's so crazy.
They'll eat anything. Like, can you imagine if Kamala Harris said there's no talent in this country? We need HB1 visas because there's no talent in this country?
Like, Indian politician says.
I love America.
Incidentally, but the reality is this. The interest that he protects believe that the American worker needs to get into the fields, whether they're on Medicaid, whether they're on disability, they need to get into the fields. They can do those jobs. But we need, when it comes to any type of like jobs that might be a little more high paying, we need to bring in indentured servants to keep those wages low. And also, I would imagine, there's also probably a worker organizing concern there, too, at that level of skilled worker because, you know, in the old system that Detroit had for making cars, you'd have a small shop that was making ball bearings, and there's 50 people in that shop, and if they decide to go on strike, you're shutting down half the production of your entire car company. So there are choke points. And I would imagine a decent amount of those HB1 visas are strategically workers who you wouldn't want to organize.
You sure you want to start a union?
Exactly. You could start a union, but they will come and raid your...
That's why, like, this is not going to be good for workers on H-1Bs. Like, they're going to be under the pressures that they've always been, even more so.
Definitely.
Talents, and people have to learn. You can't take people off an unemployment line and say, I'm going to put you into a factory where we're going to make missiles, or I'm going to put
you... How did we ever do it before?
Well, let
when
me just...
When you and I were
I'll give you an
up.
Example. In Georgia... They raided because they wanted illegal immigrants.
They wanted
people from South Korea that made batteries all their lives. You know, making batteries are very complicated. It's not an easy thing. It's very dangerous. A lot of explosions, a lot of problems. They had like 500 or 600 people, early stages, to make batteries and to teach people how to do it. Well, they wanted them to get out of the country. You're going to need that, Laura. I mean, I know you and I disagree on this. You can't just say... country's coming in, going to invest $10 billion to build a plant and going to take people off an unemployment line who haven't worked in 5 years, right, and they're going to start making missiles. It doesn't work that way.
Oh, look at her. Look at her face.
I know. Not happy.
She does sound like her jaw's wired shut.
How do you do that back in the day? We used to do that.
I hope to one day grow up and work in the missile factory.
One day I was in the unemployment line. The next thing you know, I was making warheads.
And let's be clear. I mean, some of the H-1B visas are of that ilk, like where we don't have the ability. We're bringing in a company that has a specific technology that We don't have a particularly trained workforce here. And, you know, like you bring in a battery, like there's only so many people in Georgia who are going to be skilled at building batteries.
Yeah.
And so they bring in these workers temporarily for a period of time. I think that's fine, and they train, but I have a feeling that a lot of times it's abused.
And, you know, Ingram having the absolute wrong analysis, being like, we need to stop this to raise the wages of American workers. Why are we importing having Korean workers come here to teach us how to do this stuff? Why is Korea so good at that? It's because Korea had a massive state investment in these sorts of programs that we aren't doing.
Everything we do is just simply a some type of like workaround to enrich somebody else. As long as somebody's making money except for the workers, then that's it. It's a fascinating system. Like everything is like that sort of that calculation of the GDP going up if you get robbed and have to go out and buy a new TV. GDP goes up. But the word has gone out, and so all of the little Trump cronies, they have gotten their marching orders. And here is one of these guys who just absolutely goose steps right in line. What's this guy's name again?
Scott Jennings.
Scott Jennings on CNN.
A hefty application fee, which means not just anybody can walk in here willy-nilly. Yeah, you got to be serious.
I think you should also make note.
Are you against H-1B?
That hefty application fee is also.
So you're against all immigration?
No, of course not. And I'm not against H-1Bs either. What I'm against is pretending that you are somebody that you're not, pretending that you believe in something that you're not, trying to sell the American people on something and pretend like you were supporting it the entire time, and then putting you guys in a position to defend something that you definitely wouldn't defend if it were any other person.
You said you're America first. I just don't think that there is they're mutually exclusive. You can be America first and also recognize that there may be times you could import talent from other countries that makes America stronger.
Also, let me just say, this $100,000 fee is just a way to concentrate power more.
That's how you make sure it only delivers for the wealthy. Because like, isn't there like doctors and people like in medical?
Of course, definitely.
And you're going to make the hospitals show up for that? No,
of course.
It's just going to be the tech billionaires,
of course,
who are using it explicitly for the wrong reasons.
Exactly.
Well, how else would we know you're serious?
Exactly. That's how we know you're serious.
Yeah, it's the money. What do you? How else would we ever know anything serious?
Also recognize that there may be times you could import talent from other countries that makes America stronger. We've done that for
decades. Totally, but that's not Donald Trump's.
Oh, pause it. Hold on for 1 second. Did I just hear him say that you can import talent from other countries to make America stronger?
Yeah.
That's a pretty good argument for immigration. Writ large.
Yeah.
We're going to boomerang so hard on immigration.
Scott Jennings is a lefty.
Other countries that makes America stronger. We've done that for
totally,
decades.
Totally, but that's not Donald Trump's position.
It's literally what he just said. It's literally what he just said.
I also think that this is not unique to H-1Bs. There are a lot of types of labor that immigrants actually do in this country that help the United States economy. And Trump doesn't see, I guess maybe the home health workers and the hospital workers haven't gotten to him yet, but those immigrants also...
The seasonal workers who used to work in Mar-a-Lago got to him because he used to hire undocumented immigrants all the time until he got busted for doing that. And he had no problem shipping jobs overseas to produce his products. But, you know, now he went for president. He's America first all of a sudden. People believed it.
There's also a couple of IMers are noting that there is a provision in the EO about the $100,000 that Trump can waive that fee. At his discretion. One of the things I think earns a waiver is how much of your crypto holdings are in Trump coin.
Exactly. Look at this guy. He's a pro-America. He wants to make America great.
Yes.
This guy wants to make America great.
I'll waive the fee for my next wife that I bring in.
um... Wu-Tang Clan, as an unemployed tech worker, we've seen massive IT cuts from multiple companies. I work with H-1Bs, and they're almost all great people, but they're basically in indentured servitude, and they're undercutting my wages and replacing employees.
Yep. That's why people like Elon and Trump like it.
We make $100K, then we save on the salaries.
Stephen Miller's hairline. Would love to see Jennings try to work on a farm and claim it doesn't take talent. This little bitch would fold in 10 minutes.
Mm, yeah.
Ryan from Rochester. In past wartime, skilled workers were purposely prevented from going to fight and instead kept at home to help train more skilled workers. My great-grandfather, incidentally, from Worcester, Mass., was a highly skilled machinist during World War I, and was kept home to make early torpedoes and train machinists in Rhode Island. He had to drive down there to work and drive home on weekends. Worcester was actually a big manufacturing town for weapons at that time.
My great-grandpa way out in Williston, North Dakota, was taught people welding during the war.
There you go.
My grandparents fought.
Grandma, too?
I mean, they fought each other.
Oh.
Oh, this is interesting. Hold on one second. City and State is reporting, as of today, that public defender and DSA organizer challenging Richie Torres, Delorney Nemorin.
Okay.
I'll write that down.
I think very maybe we should interview her as well.
I'm certainly intrigued.
Staff attorney at the Legal Aid Society. I like. Bronx Community Board 1. I like.
Interesting.
We shall see. The plot thickens.
Live from New York's 15.
We've mentioned that there is this internecine.
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
I guess I've always been dropping that extra N. There's an intra-ideological war brewing on the right. There is a big debate. Should we be Nazis or Nazi light? And some of your faves are all across the board. Some are actual Nazis. Some are saying we should continue to pretend like we're not Nazis. Others say, no, we shouldn't continue to pretend like we're not Nazis. We should be proud about being Nazis. And then others are like, well, let's be Nazis relative to some people, but not all the people that the Nazis don't like. Here is Steven Crowder. He's still around. It looks like he's been working out a real lot to build his big muscles. Here he is talking about how he wants to bring all of these people together. People that he has called literally
evil C-word with Candace Owens recently about the Charlie Kirk stuff.
And didn't he like lambast the Daily Wire people like?
Big Con.
Right. The Big Con. He's going to have the Big Con people on and he's going to bring them all together. And he makes this announcement with the classic Steven Crowder panic attack.
He's actually attacked Tucker too over the Palestinian Christian.
He is
nun.
So nervous,
yeah,
in doing this. It's so strange because he's been doing the show for ages and he's getting that same sort of breathless thing where I want to bring people together, and it feels like he's like hyperventilating a little bit.
It's all falling apart.
Yeah.
Look, as of right now, this moment, I believe still, Ben Shapiro, Mark Levin, Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens are all trending. And it is just a bunch of friendly and in some cases unfriendly fire. It's a civil war in the right right now. And I'll tell you, that's really honestly a fight for the soul of the country. And what I mean by that is the left has no soul. We know that. It is a soulless succubus. And so whatever moves forward as the right wing, the conservative, the populist, the MAGA movement is going to determine the soul of this country. And I've been around here, certainly doing this kind of a show, the longest, been on YouTube since 2009. I've had Ben Shapiro on this show many times. I've been on Tucker Carlson's show back. He was a host in Fox and Friend, Fox and Friends Weekends many
Why
times.
Why is he so nervous? Across.
It's so weird.
Isn't it? It's like when he starts to, like, in his own mind, think that he would have to sit down with these people that from afar he has said nasty things about. He gets, like, he gets panicked. He gets choked. He's like, he can't. His breathing becomes almost like labored. And
it's also funny because, like, all these people, they're all at each other's throats. But what they do agree on is
Steven Crowder at all. They're all like, wait, oh, Steven Crowder still around? Go in a little further because you can see he starts getting like nervous with his hands. Yeah, good. No, go back. Like right here. Like he gets like weirdly sort of like self-conscious about his hands. Like, I don't understand why this guy's having a panic attack right now. I wonder if there's somebody in there like with a gun to him or something, like holding his go ahead.
I've been on Tucker Carlson's show back. He was a host in Fox and Friends Weekends many times. We've crossed streams with Candace Owens. I've had Mark Levin on the show. I'd like to invite every single one of them, Ben Shapiro, Mark Levin, Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, on the show for a conversation, for a debate, however you guys want to do it.
Watch his hands.
Because I think there does need to be some neutral territory here. And I think that this idea of each side on the right not wanting to platform the other side, that's not a thing anymore.
What?
Everyone has a platform in this argument, in this fight. Everyone has a platform, and we should be the wing.
So we got about 2 minutes left. I wonder if he does say anything at all of substance throughout this entire
thing.
No,
absolutely not. He doesn't say anything of substance. He's really saying kumbaya here. This is a kumbaya moment.
Too bad bench pressing doesn't strengthen your courage.
Exactly. Or your mental acuity.
Of discussion. I think that some tactics lately have been underhanded. I think some people have been less than straightforward. I think there may be some bad actors, not necessarily of those in positions of authority who I've mentioned, but those who are following them. I'll tell you this, Ben Shapiro is wrong about a lot. He's also right about quite a bit. Mark Levin is wrong about a lot. He's right about quite a bit. I think his approach right now is really wrong. And the way he's dealing with it, Tucker Carlson.
Whoa, tough words. I think his approach is really wrong.
I don't even know what his approach has been.
I mean, I only bring this up. This video is not terribly entertaining other than to watch Crowder sort of have some type of internal breakdown because he's nervous at the prospect of coming face-to-face with any of these people that he's criticized in the past. But it is relevant in terms of, like, what's going on in the right. And if this was happening, within the left, there'd be countless pieces about it, it seems like.
Right. Especially what it's about. It's like, if there was a part of the left that's like, we need to do Stalinist-style purges and show trials.
Exactly. Some on the left say, let's get the tanks out. And let's go after
people
not.
With glasses on.
And the Center for American Progress come out and said we shouldn't judge people who are firebombing places. And
we need to be open to people who want to attack people for wearing spectacles.
Exactly. Exactly. I will not be forced to condemn the firing squads in Central Park because some of our friends. Now, I wouldn't necessarily do it the way they're doing it.
I don't like their approach.
Yes, I don't. Their approach seems to be wrong.
Apparently, Mark Levin slams Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, Nick Fuentes at RJC event. Is that?
Yeah, that was like a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago.
So that's what they're referring to.
And there's this big fight, and it literally is like, it's funny because on some level, they're pretending that it we shouldn't embrace a Nazi. But also what it is they're arguing about Israel. And they can't, they're also nervous about it because they don't, I don't know how much, you know, obviously Ben Shapiro deeply invested in this. Mark Levin deeply invested in this. But the rest of them, I don't know how much they care as much as they're like, where is this going to land? That's the thing I think that is really why you see Crowder getting so nervous. Yep. Because so much of what they do is just sort of spoon fed to them.
Yeah.
And like I say, you could put 10 Republicans, conservatives, whatever you want to call them, 10 Trump voters into a room. And I could tell you like I could list the top 10 positions that they have and where they land on these positions for 9 out of 10 of them. And they don't know where they're supposed to be in terms of Israel.
Yep.
And that's the problem. That's why Kevin Roberts from the Heritage Foundation is up there going like, we should dispel. We should now excommunicate Nick Fuentes, even though before he said we shouldn't. But then he qualifies that by saying, but also keep in mind, he's got a lot of followers. And so
his ideas are worth debating.
He's got millions of followers. I mean, he literally said he's got millions of followers. And it's like, okay. And, well, I thought if I brought Nick into the tent, I'd be able to convince them that they shouldn't be like that.
Yeah.
I this is, it's worth watching, but I think Crowder's like nervous because he doesn't know where he's supposed to be.
Because he's always played the sort of inside game. Like he's had like Cruz on. He's been a Republican sort of messenger. He's not comfortable freelancing.
No.
like Candace Owens might.
Right. Or Tucker Carlson even.
Owing them. I'll tell you this. Ben Shapiro is wrong about a lot. He's also right about quite a bit. Mark Levin is wrong about a lot. He's right about quite a bit. I think his approach right now is really wrong. And the way he's dealing with it, Tucker Carlson has some pretty strong ideas. He's also wrong about a lot, in my opinion. Candace Owens, you know that we disagree more than we agree on approach and on the decision to almost exclusively attack those on the right. For example, I think that Schumer, I think that Brian Stelter is far more harmful to America. I think
Brian
that Legacy
Stelter?
Media is far more harmful
Wait a
to
second.
America.
What? Than... Schumer and Brian Stelter, those are the two enemies? Brian Stelter?
Helter Stelter.
Stelter? Like, what is he doing now? Does he have a Substack?
I haven't heard that name in a long time.
America, I think that Legacy Media is far more harmful to America than Ben Shapiro or Tucker Carlson. Could say the same for Mark Levin and Candace Owens.
He's nervous again with his hands.
So I don't know why all of these
what's he doing?
Attacks are just going to each other. Not a big fan of it. Don't like it. I'll even moderate this if people want to sit down and talk across. I hate to say across the aisle. We're supposed to be in the same aisle. But we need to hash this out.
Why is he so panicking here?
We need to determine the soul of this country and the future. And I don't think it's in a great place right now. I really don't. I've been around long enough to see the momentum, to see the gains, to see the shift in young Gen Z male voters. And I think if we don't get a handle on this... And find, look, I don't believe in finding common ground based on a lie. That's why I don't try to find common ground with those on the left right now. Certainly not those in positions of leadership of the Democrat Party. Guarantee you I can find common ground with any of the aforementioned people who is trending. Ben Shapiro was supposed to be on the show
not that long ago. Well, I don't understand, like, what is going on here?
All about views, followers, trending.
It's almost like his CFO, that guy, just came down the hall and said, look, we got real problems here. I don't think we're going to meet payroll this week. Also,
they're collapsing.
I think they're mad at you. Go.
That's what it is. is there like the Israel stuff in any comment section on the right is so unpopular. I mean, I'd like to see what Levin's audience, how they're responding to it. But like even Ben Shapiro can't post stuff about it anymore.
Future reactionary says, well, his gun is no longer on the desk. It's plausible someone's holding the show hostage from just off camera.
I wonder what's in that bottle of pills on his desk. He's...
It's Ativan.
And it's empty.
Yeah, exactly. All right. I think, I mean, we don't need to watch the rest of that. It's just, I think it's funny. And if you ever come across any more addressing of this, it's pretty funny. And we don't spend that much time.
I put one in there in the tech chat.
Oh, did we have another?
Jim Brewer has a take on this.
Oh! The Jim Brewer thing, we're I feel like...
We have an embarrassment of riches.
There's something like, we're on a parallel journey with Jim Brewer. As Jim Brewer sort of like spirals down into madness, we are in a parallel way spiraling down into madness by following him, essentially. Like we're in our own Jim Brewer wormhole. Like we've got like four clips of Jim Brewer that we don't know which one to play.
We're so backed up on Brewer.
I don't know which one to choose.
Poor Brian's going to have a breakdown.
I'm going to start doing animal noises in my sleep.
Yeah. Oh, Cranking My Hog says, speaking of Crowder, he canceled his show today because of technical difficulties right after those Epstein emails hit the news.
Who canceled?
Crowder.
Hmm.
What? Who cares? Not like
who knows why, but technical.
No, I mean who like what controversy could he stir up? Why do nobody cares about you, Steven? Go ahead and broadcast. Sell your pills.
Oh, this is a good question. Marilyn Mailman, have you guys kept up with the Blaze accusing someone of planting a J6 pipe bomb based on gate analysis? Yes, I actually have been following.
Sam's all over this.
It happened like 3 or 4 days ago, 5 or 6, maybe 5 days ago. The Blaze announced that they had this breakthrough, breaking story that some like sort of online sleuth had analyzed the gait, the pattern in which someone walks.
Mm-hmm.
From video outside the DNC of a person who planted a pipe bomb on January 6th. We sort of like memory hold this. People don't remember that this happened. And the bomb never went off. And so this person analyzed the gate and accused I think it was a Capitol Police member of hiding their identity and planting it. And then there was all sorts of like, and the Blaze ran with the story and named the Capitol Police person. And then realized, maybe we didn't get that right.
Maybe I'm not the gate expert.
And I think, like, if I remember correctly, there was even like some Republican lawmakers who retweeted it out. I think maybe even Massey did. I'm not sure. And and then it turned out to be a complete lie. And so, of course, this woman, I think, or the Capitol Police, I think it's going to come out, is going to sue the hell out of the Blaze. And should, of course. These people are lunatics.
I mean, that's crazy.
And then, like, I read some of the comments at the time, and they're like, this is maybe perhaps a drill that was taking place on that day. And the bomb was made in a rudimentary fashion so as to be easily taken care of. I don't know. But it was pretty crazy. All right. So should we do Brewer? Which one are we going to do?
Yeah, do whichever one you want.
Brewer on the whole, this is the right. I mean, this is a civil war, and you need a diplomat to come in and sort of.
Yeah,
punches.
I guess we could do this one. I really do like the FTC. Maybe we'll play a little bit of the FTC one.
I mean, that one's evergreen, the FTC.
Yeah, that's true. This is also, I bet you, evergreen.
Oh, incidentally, what Jim Brewer does now is he has a some type of office that is pretty snazzy. And he has a big TV. They put an image up there, and then he just riffs.
He's got the home security cameras in the room, too, looks like.
Yep. Stand-up podcasting.
Tucker? Tucker? I got to be honest with you. I've been away. But because I hear all the noise screaming.
You've been in this basement.
At Tucker? Now I got to see what's going on. And everyone that complained, we need to. I seen some guy, I don't know who he was. And he's going, let me tell you something. This is what he sounded like.
This
he said,
is Mark
That's
Levin
exactly what the guy said. He's like, hey, he's a little guy. He's not speaking of love. He's not speaking. He's like, let me tell you something. And he literally says, yeah, I think you're tough with your stupid little podcast. Stupid little podcast. Tucker's got millions of people following. You got like 0.08 on the decimal of top 10 in radio, who nobody listens to anymore. What are you talking about? Let me tell you something about your stupid little podcast and your stupid little talk show and your stupid little... You're going to go through me. This guy had a breakdown. You're going to go through me with your...
Somebody had a breakdown.
But first off, I got to say, his Mark Levin impersonation is not bad.
It is good, yeah.
But I just... This format is so sort of disturbing. There are people, I think, in the room with him. And every, I don't know, 10 minutes or so, they laugh. And it's often an uncomfortable laugh. But you know they're getting a paycheck, and let's see where this goes.
I got to tell everyone who's creating the noise. You got to come up with a new word. No one's buying Nazi anymore. No one's buying anti-Semite. You overplayed it. You overplayed. He farted too long because he's an anti-Semite. That's why. I don't eat hot dogs. Oh, what are you, pro Hamas? Oh, so you're for terrorism. I don't get the yarmulke. Oh, my God, he's a you-know-what hater. You played it too hard. It's
I don't get the yarmulke? Well, now, actually, you're sort of actually heading into...
Oh, here we go. Sam's going to overplay it.
Oh, yeah, overplay this. I'm sorry, you're a Christ killer.
I don't get the weird sideburns.
It's overplayed. You're drawing so much attention, it's having the opposite effect. Mm-hmm. So what is the thing with Tucker? I had to look at we need to destroy this Tucker. I want everyone that controls media.
That controls media.
And I want all of our Congress that's backed by APAC. I mean, you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. And I want every single mass.
All our media that's backed by APAC, we control the media. Okay.
Look, nobody's buying it.
Nobody's buying it anymore. God. God. Juju,
we control and we own. We have copywritten and we have control of. I want them to take down Tucker.
Take down Tucker. Take down Tucker.
You're not taking down Tucker. You're not taking down Tucker. And if you're that pissed, what are you pissed about? How does anyone get that pissed?
But what are you doing?
Oh, it's Nazi. I guess it was this guy, Nick Fuentes. I don't know who he is. I've seen him a couple of times, the way he dresses or whatever. And that's not a knock on Nick. I just don't know what he does. I don't know. I'm sorry. It's no offense to you, Nick. It really isn't. What? But, you know, some of the people I ran into, like, oh, dude, he's Nick Fuentes, he's bad. He's bad. I said, what do you mean he's bad? Dude, he's racist. I'm like, what do you mean? Oh, he said all black people should be in jail. I don't know if that's what he said, but that's what I mean, you know. He said
that. I'll pause it for 1 second. I should say, in Jim's defense, the internet couldn't get down to the bunker he's in. And so they pre-record these and then just, you know, ship them up by carrier pigeon. At what point can you say, I don't know who Nick Fuentes is, but I hear people make all these accusations and I never, ever, ever, ever have bothered to look them up, but I'm going to do a video about it.
This is a common theme for our boy, Jim Brewer. Who never knows anything he's ranting about.
Like, it's amazing.
So much passion.
We're going to save the FTC win problem.
Why is everybody getting angry for no reason?
Because the guy said Hitler was right.
what did he say? Oh, he said Hitler was right. Okay.
What did Jimmy Dore say? I guess he doesn't believe in race mixing or something. But, you know, he's got other ideas.
The Jews are this and the Mexicans are that. Whatever Nick Fuentes said. I don't know. But these guys were like, oh, he's bad, he's bad. Okay? But so he's going on Tucker. Now I got to watch it. Did this already happen? Then I gotta watch it.
I gotta watch it.
Except but first, let me react to it.
Let me react to the whole thing.
Like, one of those guys.
I'm going to Tarantino this thing.
One of those guys just use AI to give him a basic fact sheet to look over.
Do you think that they even did that?
No, they should.
I think it's like what I think the way that they prep for the show is somebody is in charge of making a graphic with pictures on it of people. Then Jim, how many is he going to riff? I'm just going to riff on it.
What a value add with him hee-hawing over.
Said.
Three hee-haws.
Are they pissed about what was said, or are they pissed just because he talked with him?
I think just them doing a full collaboration. It was the fact that Tucker platformed.
How dare Tucker give this guy a platform? So to all of you, I say... Everyone that sold the Iraq war, how dare you give a platform to send our children to go kill Iraqi children platform. When you knew it was a lie from the very beginning.
So I've got some very bad news for Jim Brewer about Tucker Carlson.
Also, I mean, if Jim Brewer is pretending to care about being anti-war now, Nick Fuentes is pretty much okay with, like, say, going into Venezuela because of the Monroe Doctrine. So,
I don't know about that.
They say this.
I heard some nerd on the podcast talking about
the Monroe Doctrine.
They're mad. Says,
oh, Tucker Carlson supported the Iraq War, and Nick Fuentes wants to go to Venezuela.
Everyone's so mad.
This is like a median conservative, though.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
Platform is bigger. Which platform has more power? The platform that's barking up a storm, because we're done with your platform.
What?
Open conversation is the way of humans connecting. And if Nick Fuentes is a racist, he's a psychopath, he's an anti-Semite, I don't care if he hates white people. I don't care if he makes...
Hold up.
Wait a second. We got to draw the line somewhere.
Let me think of the most extreme example I can think of.
What's the worst thing somebody could do?
Oh, these are brilliant.
You know how many times Jim Brewer has done a video defending people who hate white people.
Honestly, this is like I feel like they should send these to his therapist.
I'm not convinced that this isn't made for us.
I would cut out the middleman and just send him to a therapist.
This is like a process where he has to send something into a therapist about him doing a Rorschach-style rant about something.
The way of humans connecting. And if Nick Fuentes is a racist, he's a psychopath, he's an anti-Semite, I don't care if he hates white people. I don't care if he makes a personal war against Jim Brewer. I don't care. He can't affect me.
Because I'm white.
I know what truth is. And if I know truth and you know truth, why would you fight so hard? With such vicious intent for the man to speak. Wouldn't you rather know who this man is?
No.
Wouldn't you rather just know who he is? Well, at least I know how he is. Because I can tell you this, all our politicians, Tom Brady and everyone that we idolize, we don't know who they really are. Do we? Do we know who they really are? The guy that's up there going...
The idea that we really know who Nick Fuentes is from that Tucker Carlson puff piece is pretty stupid.
So is Tom Brady influencing politics?
Yeah, that was kind of random. That's a good pause face, though, there.
Here we go. Yes. We need to defend the nation, and we need to go to war, and we need to... But do we know these people? Or is it just because, well, he's Republican. He's a Democrat. He's a right wing. He's a conservative. Yeah, we need more liberals. Is he that? Are they that? Are you really, really still giving your life to them? Are you really? You Sam still can't see.
Disassociating.
The circus that they're performing in front of us. Laughing in our face. Dude, let me tell you something. I do my best. And listen, I fail like anyone else.
Okay, we got it. I can't better anymore. This is... At one point, it starts to feel like... At one point, it really just starts to feel like not appropriate. It really...
Jim Brewer screaming in his face.
How many views does this have? Like, I'm gonna guess like 500,000.
140.
Okay.
So,
I don't want Jim to think I'm two-faced when I meet.
Did you just subscribe?
Yeah. Yeah. If I ever meet you, Jim, I will be very excited, and it's not two-faced. I really do want to shake your hand.
Oh my god. Oh God!
And this Elon.
Yeah, let's pick on somebody.
Yeah, let's. I
pick on the richest man in the world.
Exactly. At least we know he's on ketamine. It's hard to know what is going on down at his. Where does Brewer live now? In Florida.
Florida.
Yeah.
Remember, he tagged Ron DeSantis in a chemtrails video.
Oh, right, I forgot about that. Yeah. Where's the governor?
Because I know what truth is, I yell in my basement.
God. What number is this? Honestly, I feel very uncomfortable now. Like that level of rubbernecking, I feel like is just not appropriate. So here's Elon Musk. He went to a Tesla shareholder meeting November 6th, and I think this was just on the precipice or just after he had been awarded by Tesla,
the
board. Like a $1 trillion pay package. And here he is performing in front of the shareholder meeting. One can only imagine how he got prepped for this, as it were. But here he is.
I think we may be able to give people, if somebody's committed crime, a more humane form of
containment of future crime, which is if you say, like, you now get a free Optimus, and it's just going to follow you around and stop you from doing crime. But other than that, you get to do anything. It's just going to stop you from committing crime. That's really it. You don't have to put people in, like, prisons and stuff. It's pretty wild to think of the various, of all the possibilities, but I think it's clearly the future. I think we may.
So, let's play a little bit with this scenario. So you don't go to prison after you commit a crime. You just need to have a cop follow you around.
A RoboCop.
A RoboCop follow you around for, I don't know, whatever your term, your sentence is, right? Like 10 years.
That can somehow tell when you're doing a crime.
That's going to assess when you're doing a crime.
And intervene.
What's it going to do, kill you?
Stop crime. Stop crime.
It's far more humane.
I wonder if that's going to work with white-collar crime or just general scams.
Yeah, or like harassing flight attendants.
The future... This guy. And it's honestly like he just sits around who knows what hallucinogens and then goes and delivers it as part of his shareholder meeting, and then that's it.
You can see his brother. You can see his brother Kimball in the front row there. If you want to zoom in on that, he's got the cowboy hat on. It's pretty distinctive. Google Kimball Kimball Musk and Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh, interesting. Should we play this Fetterman video? Let me call in. We'll take a caller. Oh, nope, that didn't work. Caller, I think is down. Let's see. All right, I'm going to take two calls. The number is 646-257-3920. Off to the races. 646-257-3920. Here is the show, Honestly, with Barry Weiss. And she's interviewing John Fetterman, who seems to be in some Washington hotel room, I guess. Saying that because...
Is that
the Constitution? Appears to have the Constitution on the back wall. I'm just guessing that's what it is. I don't know. I'm having a tough time with everything after watching that Jim Brewer thing.
Everyone's having a tough time.
Here is Fetterman. Look, there's a decent chance that Democrats could pick up a seat or two or three in 2026 Senate election. Maine is a possibility. Iowa is a possibility. Alaska is a possibility. Ohio, I mean, not inconceivable.
Especially with Vivek running.
It's going to depend on who wins the primary. And if you get into the unlikely, but not impossible scenario where the Democrats pick up four seats. Then you could be looking at a situation where maybe it would take more than four, because that would be 50-50. I don't know if it's possible. There's five seats. But I don't think it's out of the realm that Fetterman, who is... He's not up for re-election until 2026, is it? Oh, he is up for re-election in 2026. Is that right? In 2028, exactly. And so it's not impossible to imagine that in his last 2 years as a Senate, he if it is of value to the Republican Party, like if he tilts them in the right direction, that he could flip. And here he is talking with Barry Weiss, complaining about, of course, how the Democrats have really left him in many ways. Here is John Fetterman.
My heart breaks for what the Jewish communities suffered, especially after 10/7. I've had the honor of meeting, you know, members of the hostages, former people that were kept underground for 500 days. I mean, those are heroes. I've met with widows. Their husbands were lost in the Gaza war, and they have eight children, raising eight children by their own. That's a hero for all of it.
Incidentally,
it's heartbreaking.
You should know that there are families in Gaza where they have had eight children killed along with the parents. In fact, many, many, many such situations. More common is, of course, kids who are orphaned, kids who have lost their brothers and their sisters and their mother and their father, or fathers who have lost their wives and their children, or wives and women who have lost their children, their husbands, their parents. I mean, it's just beyond bizarre. The
tunnel vision.
The tunnel vision.
Children by their own. That's a hero for all of it. So for me, it's heartbreaking. And that's been what's so difficult for me is like being devotion to Israel becoming increasingly incompatible with being a proud Democrat now, too. And that's put me at odds. And the things that put me at odds have all converged at the same time.
Pause
you know,
for
the
one
Gaza
second.
War
I just
that...
want to mention that devotion to Israel can you imagine a senator going like, my devotion to France has put me at odds with the Democratic Party? Can you imagine if Ilhan Omar said like, my devotion to Somalia put me at odds. It would be nonstop. Nonstop. I don't think it's so, devotion's probably the wrong word that he would use. So I don't think it's like that horrific. Like, I think it's okay. I mean, I guess, you know, if he had particularly, you know, if he had been an immigrant, I mean, he grew up in Pennsylvania. It's weird that he has that level of devotion, but nevertheless. But also, to be clear, you should see the Republican Party is also going to start getting a little more hostile, I think, to Israel. Because it's completely the support that we have given Israel has been completely at the expense of United States foreign policy. Never mind at the expense of like many, many lives in the region. But the fact that he's now saying like it's incompatible with being a good Democrat, it really does feel like he's starting to set the table of how the party left me. But just go ahead a little more.
Now, too. And that's put me at odds. And the things that put me at odds have all converged at the same time. You know, the Gaza war, the peace deal, and then we moved right into a shutdown. You know, like now Democrats might not be allowed to hold these views.
Oh. Is he not going to be allowed to hold these views? You mean voters might not appreciate me holding these views.
But I want to be a senator still.
We can't raise premiums on people? Are we not allowed to hold that view anymore? We can't allow the president to willy-nilly decide what things are going to get funded and what aren't? Is that... we're not allowed to believe that anymore? It's like,
I mean, he's basically
like the guy's seven.
He's already value for Republicans. It's his clip saying Democrats designed the Obamacare subsidies to expire that their GOP has been playing this entire shutdown?
No, the last person to the reason why they were designed to expire was because the only way to get Joe Manchin, now an independent, on board. Essentially, your model.
Come on, Pennsylvania voters, let's get that guy's unapproval.
Don't allow him to do something, please. Yeah. Calling from a 309 area code, you are one of two phone calls that will be on the program today. Who is this? Where are you calling from?
This is me?
Yes.
Hey, my name is Bailey with Louisville DSA. Wanted to shout out an event we have going on to raise $2 million in medical debt. The campaign we're doing is called Dare to Eliminate Medical Debt. It's in Louisville, Kentucky. But if you are in southern Indiana, if you are in the Cincinnati area, really anywhere in Kentucky, we're trying to raise $11,000 to cancel $2 million of medical debt. Thursday, we're having Tim Faust, very excited to have him come and speak Thursday, November 20th. On Friday, November 21st, we're doing a punk show as a fundraiser for this. You can find all the information on, if you just look up, pick your favorite browser, look up Dare to Eliminate Medical Debt. The campaign we're doing is called Dare. It's being done through the Undo Medical Debt. And this isn't just something I wanted to also shout out, like, you should come to ours. You should help us raise money for this. It's a great thing. It'll get DSA, especially in the Midwest, really pushed out there.
Bailey,
but
no, hold on for 1 second.
Yeah.
Just to explain to people, you can buy debt. There's all sorts of markets where you buy debt that has ostensibly gone bad. In other words, like the debt holder doesn't feel like they're going to collect. So they go and they sell it. Very often they'll sell it to like debt collectors, and they'll sell it for, you know, sometimes 5 cents on the dollar. And they'll go to the debt collector. They'll say, okay, I'm owed a dollar. If you give me 5 cents, you can be the one who tries to collect it. And then the debt collector goes out there, and that's the way they make their money. But what you guys are doing is for $11,000, you can buy $2 million worth of debt, and then you're not going to try and collect it. You're just going to forgive it, essentially, right?
Yes. Yes, that is exactly correct.
That's awesome. Is there where can people go to get more information on this if they're in the area?
So, like I said, if you just type in your favorite browser, Dare to Eliminate Medical Debt, it will come up. But you can also go to the Louisville DSA website, so dsalouisville.org, and under Current Campaigns, you'll see Dare to Erase Medical Debt. That's us. That's what we're trying to get out there. You can also do this. I wanted to pitch also, like, you can do this locally wherever you are also. The folks over at Undo Medical Debt are fantastic. Don't want to take up too much more of your time.
Okay, well, we'll link to this in the YouTube and podcast descriptions today.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right, good
luck with it. And also for the – hey, appreciate it. And also Poggers for the Twitch chat.
Yes, Poggers indeed. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you.
We will put a link to that. It's a great thing to do. You could do it in your own community too. I wonder if Schumer knows that Bailey's doing that. I know. Calling from a 916 area code, you are the final caller of the day, assuming it's not just a horrible train wreck right at the beginning. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Is this me?
Yes, it is you.
This is Jack calling from Southern California.
Jack from Southern California, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I didn't unfortunately have a cool medical debt thing to promote, but I was looking through your Wikipedia the other day, and I saw this was originally a show by Janine Garofalo. I was just kind of curious how that, what happened to end up in your hands, kind of.
Well, it actually, the very, very beginning of the show was in 2003 in the run-up to the Iraq War. Tom Sharpling gave me 2 hours on his show to do what I called the Majority Report, and Janine was a guest on it. And then about a year later, maybe it was at the end of 2003, Janine called me and said, these people are getting together a radio network and they want me to do a show. And I told them I'd do a show if you do it with me. And at the time I was out in LA, I think at the, when I first heard from her, I was directing a Gary Busey fake reality show and was doing a sequel to a show, to a movie I had made. And I said, all right, I'll do it. And I thought we would do it for 6 months from like April. The show launched on April, or March 31st, I think it was, and 2004. And I thought we would just do it to the election, essentially. And I had a kid. I got married basically in those 6 months, or my ex-wife got pregnant. And I decided ultimately to keep doing it. And Janine, after a while, you know, it was a total different lifestyle change for both of us. And so she left the show, I want to say, in 2005 or 6, she went to do West Wing for an extended period of time. And we still did the show, but then she ultimately left the show. And that was that.
Cool. Wow.
Yeah, man.
You've been doing this since 2004.
Yeah, I'm old.
you don't look a day over 5 years old.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Things have just gotten very weird since we watched that Jim Brewer thing. I do honestly feel like
the gas leak on the entire planet.
Yeah, I do. I do have that feeling of like everything's moving slow-mo.
Get used to it.
To get normal again.
Center Spiral. I've been curious about how you came upon your ending show song. It's great. The show song is called Pilot Light. It is done by Dave Derby. He made that song for the show I was just talking about I was doing in 2004 called Pilot Season. And it was the way that we ended that show. And when I did this show and we got dinged by YouTube for using other music, I'm like, well, I own the soundtrack, and so let's play this song. And Dave still does the song. Ted Leo did it. I've seen covers of it online by different bands. They're all great. But Dave Derby, very talented. He's got he had a band called Gramercy Arms. I think he's still doing that. And he was the lead of the Dam Builders, a band from Boston in the 90s. And I just saw him like a month ago do a reunion. It was awesome.
It's a Lord Day today.
Huh?
We're doing Lord dumps yep. today.
It's all okay, and that's it for our phone call portion of the program. Left is strange. Curious how long you've been doing your intro message. I don't know what that means. Oh, since we moved over here. Prior to that, in 2010, I think we were saying from the Dollar Pizza District we were in.
You were in Manhattan. Huh?
Yes. And there was like three places where you could get dollar pizza within like a block and a half from us.
Remember that?
You were never there.
No, I mean, I remember dollar pizza, though.
No, there still is dollar pizza.
I ain't seen that. It's like $1.50 now.
It's all gone since freaking COVID. All right. 5 IMs. Then we're getting out of here.
Thanks, Fauci.
Social... Socialist Marxist. I'm not sure anyone has ever looked as drunk on air as Jim Brewer. There are definitely a few who sound drunk, but Jim has that drunk squint that you can spot from a mile away.
I think he's supposed to be sober.
I think he's sober.
Yeah, me and him both have, like, drunk high eyes.
Oh. Yeah, Dorsey just reminded me that it was in the literal but not metaphorical shadow of the New York Times.
That was in the intro?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because we were just around the corner from the New York Times building. JR in Philly, dude, are we about to see Crowder cry?
Yeah.
It's sort of
increasingly feeling. Getting less comfortable in front of the camera.
It's weird.
Yeah. Well, apparently he had a button to tell the comedian on the show to stop being so funny.
Yes.
Like Dave Landau, yeah. That is the funniest thing to ever.
The most
actually.
Insecure dude ever.
Installing a button to say, tone it down.
I have a button that so I can tell these guys, let me tell the good stories. I'm sorry.
I have a joke. Knock, knock. Orange glad. It's a banana.
There's like a roster of guys he's kicked out of that studio, and now he's not comfortable around anybody.
Yep. Crime. The 100,000 H-1B fee is also subject to exemption at Trump's discretion, so another way for him to get business to come to him and bribe or bend the knee. Indeed. Yep. Mike drew me. I think it's a crime that even after I became a member, you're still having these technical difficulties. Cascadia Afa. Hey, I'm Mark Rue. I really want to recommend some folks from the Anti-Fascist Internationalist Front who are actively opposing the military junta in Myanmar as a potential guest. I think they'd give valuable insight into the situation on the ground between the resistant forces and the junta, how their fight against fascism relates to the broader international rise of authoritarianism. Check out Azad Afa or IF in Myanmar on Insta. Send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com is the best way.
Also,
to do.
Any recommendations on good coverage of Sudan would be
yes.
Please email us.
We've been working on that. Also, reminder, if you got a best of pick from this year, send us an email, put in the subject line best of, and you can have fashion our best of week or week and a half. I think it might be this year because of the way that things fall. Sam from Ottawa, didn't Trump accuse Hillary of getting the debate questions beforehand? All the while, Trump had Wolf getting fed CNN questions beforehand. Another example of every accusation is an admission. And the final I am of the day. Let's see. Logical thinkings. UMC nurses in New Orleans are on strike. They've been off and on striking for a while now. This current cycle is 3 days. So yesterday, today, and tomorrow, they're all striking on the sidewalk. Please, anyone in New Orleans, come and join them. Maybe we can have them on as a guest. UMC nurses in New Orleans. Okay, folks. Emma did a pre-tape for tomorrow, but Matt will be here live. I'll be back on Friday. And, of course, Matt and Brandon will be here tomorrow. Bye-bye.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want. But I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining. where the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid.